What a long, strange trip it's been.
Let me start off by saying that the pain in my leg, which keeps me from being here in person tonight, runs a distant second to the pain in my heart because I'm not here tonight. That's especially so because I'm honored to be included in the same class as Dr. Ben Graf Henneke. Dr. Henneke was not only the president at TU, he also taught the first class I ever took, broadcast announcing. Dr. Henneke was very encouraging in a situation in which I'm sure more than once, upon hearing my stentorian soprano profundo recital of an assignment, wondered if maybe it wouldn't be more honest to just suggest I ponder other career opportunities. But he didn't. And so I stayed after a dream that I'd first begun the summer of my 10th year. That was when my family moved to a house a couple of blocks away from our hometown station. I could look out my bedroom window while allegedly doing my homework and see that neon sign flashing. Now, to mere mortals, that would say, KWAK, KWAK. But to someone factory-wired weird like me, all it was blinking was, Scooter, come see. So, one 95-degree July afternoon, I rode my bike over and told them I'd always loved to listen to radio.
All 10 years worth of always.
And I wanted to see how they did it. They were carrying the Mutual baseball game of the day, and this part had to be fate. That day, the game had the Boston Red Sox, and just after the station guide pointed to all three or seven of the things in the other room that made it all work, my hero, Ted Williams, jacked one out of Fenway Park. And I was hooked. No, not on radio, not yet. That was to come later. I was hooked on watching a baseball game with my hero hitting home runs, being broadcast in air-conditioned comfort. Like I said, it was a 95-degree day, and if I'd heard Ted Williams hit that home run in my room two blocks away, it would not have been in air-conditioned comfort. So, as you might guess, most of my afternoons that summer were spent gazing intently through the glass window at all three or seven pieces of whatever it was that made it all happen. Well, one day, I guess they got tired of me being around and decided to scare me off, so they said, Son, would you like to do one of our station breaks?
How would I do that?
They wrote it all out for me and told me just to read it when the man in the other room pointed to me. They even let me call my folks and some friends to tell them I was going to be on the radio. Well, for three or four days after my big debut, everywhere I went, people said to me, George, back in those days, they always called me by my maiden name, George. George, we heard you on the radio the other day, and you sounded just as good as those grown men. And that is when the radio hook went in, never to be let go. They let me do more and more things on the radio, and by the time I was a sophomore in high school, they'd hired me full-time doing 4 p.m. till 10:30 sign-off. Well, I took my college freshman year off from broadcasting and realized how much I was missing it. So then, another of God's flukenstances befell me. Midway through the summer, I wrote to P.T. Richardson, a TU radio classmate, who was also a UKAKC transmitter engineer, and I told Pete to let them know if they needed some part-time help in the fall, by golly, I was available. Amazingly, just a few days later, I got a call from Clayton Vaughn saying they did need someone to do Saturday and Sunday 6 to midnight, and if I was interested, I should send them a tape. I did, but they hired me anyway. Then by the time I got there, someone else had left, and I was offered midnights of 6. Well, since I was only signed up for 17 hours that semester, I said, why not? Well, when my weight had gone down to 125 pounds and I could feel my grades dropping even faster, I gave Dick Schmitz my resignation. And I was truly amazed when he said they had someone who was leaving soon, so they'd put him on to overnights and let me move up to 9 to midnight so I could get enough sleep to keep my health and my National Merit Scholarship. From there on, for these almost 51 years, every step of the way and every stumble, of which there have been way too many, it's all been a living out of that dream that got started that day in 1950 in air-conditioned comfort. I can tell you that the number of days I've said out loud, and they paid me to do this, outweighs by about 99-1 the number of times I've said, well, that's the crud you got to put up with to afford your spam-fried cat litter. To have had all that, and then to top it off, being included in this group tonight means more than I can begin to say. In just a few more weeks, I'll be taking retirement, and unless some hometown operation within a couple hours drive of my mom's place on Bull Shoals Lake wants some help, I'll move to a cabin in the hills and fill out the rest of my shift reading and rereading until I crack the Armageddon code weaved through the Hobbit trilogy and the Harry Potter novels, and in my spare time, selling on eBay Grand Ole Opry action figures that I've carved out of petrified goo goo clusters. So to all of you here tonight, especially to Dick Schmitz for being my mentor all these years, and to everyone involved in broadcasting in the 60s, 70s, and during my brief return in the late 80s, to the listeners, the fellow radio rats, among whom there was as much after-hours camaraderie as there was on-air competition, the newspaper writers who put us down like Jim Downing and Troy Gordon, and the wonderful praiseful writings about our industry by John Woolsey, I'd like to say, in the format of what's been my show closer ever since 1967. George Basil, Soxel, Scott, Scooter B. Seagraves III. Thank you, Magic Empire. Adios, Mother Runios. And may the albino aardvark nip at your knee pits evermore.
What a long, strange trip it's been.